Welcome, friends. It is episode 79 of Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, your trusty host for this very podcast, also a writer and editor for the website. Hope you guys are doing great. You didn't get knocked out of too many fantasy drafts. Hope you didn't get knocked out of too many fantasy drafts. Too many elimination pools this past week. I am surviving, knock on wood, surviving so far. And my fantasy team is not so great the first week out, but it's 1 week in the NFL season, right? So, you know, you can't really can't get too worried about that, especially if you're a New England Patriots fan as I am. I can hear all the hate coming my way. Bring it. Let's go. Even though one loss, Brady Belichick not going anywhere. Everything's going to be fine starting week two, I hope. This week on the show, we have a returning guest. I believe this is his third time on this very program. And he reached out to me because he wanted to talk. And I, you know, when that call goes out, you got to listen, especially to your friends. So Dave Doyle from MMA Fighting and Yahoo Sports and so on, he is welcome him back to the show because he wanted to talk about his experiences at PWG and the Battle of Los Angeles. He went to night three and had a great time. It was a great card. You can read all about it on our site. Dave went. He saw one of the best big man matches he said he has ever seen. So we're going to talk all about that, and we're going to talk about this past weekend's UFC event, UFC 215, and kind of just going into the show, what we felt, and also coming out of it, where some of the big stories. We talk a little bit about this weekend's show in Pittsburgh, available on FS1, headlined by former middleweight champion Luke Rockhold taking on David Branch, former two-division champion, World Series of Fighting, and you know a few other things as well. A little bit about John Jones, because as you hear this will be on Wednesday, September 13th. On Tuesday night, John Jones, it appears that according to ESPN sources, that his B sample confirms a failed test as well. So it looks like no reprieve for John Jones coming. So we talked a little bit about that and so on and so forth. So without further ado, let's get to our special guest of the week, Dave Doyle of MMA Fighting and Yahoo Sports. When the bat signal goes out that one of my friends wants to talk, the phone line and the Skype line is always, always open. And I'm very happy to welcome back a friend of the show, your friend, my friend, writes for MMA Fighting, Yahoo Sports, has done all kinds of stuff. You know him, man, it has written for our site, Dave Doyle. We welcome Dave back on the other end of the line. He wants to talk about, you want to talk about your experiences at Bola. But I'm going to make you wait, my friend, because I know. I'm going to make you talk about some MMA stuff first. But
twist my arm.
I know. Twist your arm. And yeah, you got to really sell it, though. You know, we're working off the right here. You got to really sell that. But we'll start with the really tough questions. Actually, well, I'd say not even tough questions, but more of a statement, because you and I were just talking about this about the Patriots. As a fellow Patriots fan, even though you're on the left coast, tell everyone why they should just shut up about the Patriots' demise. The floor is yours.
Because you know the Patriots have kind of a 15-year track record at this point with the greatest coach in the history of football and the greatest quarterback in the history of football. And I can hear people clicking off the podcast now, but I don't care because it's principle that matters. So you know, I mean, look, that did not look like a Super Bowl winning defense out there on Thursday night. But at the same time, you know, in 2003, when they lost to the Bills 31-0 in the season opener and everyone wrote them off, they went 14-2 and won the championship that year. And, you know, just a few years ago, they got absolutely waxed by Kansas City and people were calling for the end of Tom Brady's days. So, you know, yeah, sure, they have a ways to go, but relax, Patriots Nation. You know, things will be okay. And to the rest of the country, sorry, we'll be back. You know it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. The best stat that I heard to make us feel better is the last three times that the Patriots have lost an opener, they've won the Super Bowl. So I think we're in pretty good. That's pretty good stats. The last 3-0. I mean, come on now. It's fun to be hated. You know, it's time for us to wear the black hat, right?
It really is. You know, in a way, I hate to admit this, but I kind of understand Yankees fans now. I never thought I'd see that day, but I understand what it's like to, you know, to be the dynasty. And then eventually, you know, you want everyone to love your team. But when you keep realizing that it's just hate and hate and hate, it's like, okay, embrace it and, you know, go the full heel route.
I would completely agree. It's a comparison I've heard made before, and I have a friend of mine that is a really good friend of mine. He's obviously a diehard New England sports fan. Hates the Yankees so bad that anything from New York, associated with New York, he can't stand, like Billy Joel, like Bruce Springsteen. Like he just can't like bring. He's a little crazy, but we made that comparison before, and he can't stand it because anything to be compared to the Yankees. It drives him nuts. So I bring it up every once and again. But, yeah, it's an apt comparison, you know, and that's it's good to be king. It's good to be king. Let's see. So where do we want to begin? Oh, yeah, let's talk about this past weekend. Actually, you know what? There's one thing I wanted to ask you about because I did not ask you about this last time. I don't know if it had actually came out when we talked a few months ago. When we were talking about the Rena Mexico piece. And this came up because I talked to Esther Lynn a couple of months ago or last month about the your contribution to that Richard Deitch piece about in Sports Illustrated SI.com about you know gay sports writers and we had never actually talked about that. So I just wanted to kind of ask real quick, how did that from your perspective or how did that come to be, and then I guess your experience contributing that and being part of that that column.
Yeah, well I'm actually straight, so no. You know what, for the longest time being in this business, I had always kind of compartmentalized the idea that like, well, you know, this has nothing to do with my job. You know, I always kind of rationalized like, no, just kind of keep this quiet. But I always kind of knew deep down, you know, as the years were going on, like I at the end of the day, I wasn't quite doing my job properly because I was hiding a big part of who I am, because as a journalist, you know, as a journalist and as a writer, you need to be authentic. You know, authenticity resonates with readers. And as long as I was hiding a big part of who I was, you know, I just felt like I wasn't being the best journalist I could be. I mean, partly it was just time, you know, in terms of how that thing in Sports Illustrated came together. Someone passed Deitch along a name. It was actually right around the time that he linked to my Arena Mexico piece. So have been talking, and then like my name came up, kind of separately. So it was kind of a weird little confluence of events. And he asked if I wanted to talk, and I was like, yeah, sure. And I mean, you know, I don't know. I just, it's been an absolutely like completely positive experience. I wish I had done it years ago. You know, I can't say that there's been any, like, I kind of feel like some people expected me to just transform overnight from myself into, like, Big Gay Al from South Park, and that hasn't quite really, you know, that quite really hasn't happened. There was just this flurry of attention, and then things kind of went back to normal, which is kind of how I want it, because I don't want this to be, like, you know, a gimmick, so to speak. Like, I want that out there. I want people to know it, but at the same time, you know, like I said, I don't want to be constantly hard. Like, okay, if you were asking like my opinion of the Gilbert Melendez and Jeremy Stevens fight, like the fact that I'm gay has absolutely nothing to do with that. I had to write something off the piece with Katerov and Chechnya, and that's like something where I feel like I can contribute. Just kind of like if I'm speaking up, you know, maybe more people will think about it, sort of thing, and just. You know, another thing that kind of popped up is, like, I've had people reach out to me. I've had readers reach out to me. Like, it's been a tremendously positive experience. Wish I had done it before. I have not had any, like, I was prepared for, like, you know, I was prepared to be, you know, like just lambasted on Twitter by idiots, and that never really happened. And I've had, you know, I'm not going to name names, but I have some people in MMA reach out to me privately who you wouldn't think are the most progressive people, and more or less told me like, hey, you know what? You've always been fair to me. We're cool. And so on. So that's it in a nutshell.
Good. Awesome. Well, yeah. When I had saw your name in that, and you and I are Facebook friends, I had no idea. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay. And then that was it, you know, and I'm glad to hear. And Esther had relayed, you know, similar sentiments as well in terms of her being very comfortable. And people can go back and hear the interview. I want to hear her story and basically how she was very comfortable with, you know, she says she's a very shy person and that it was actually very easy to kind of, you know, make it publicly known about her background and who she is and all that. So, yeah, it's weird. I think this community that is so from the outside world kind of, you know, looked down on being, you know, just everyone has shaved heads and everyone has, you know, tattoos and white supremacists and all, you know, basically the bullshit that everyone that hates the sport kind of associates with it. You know, it seems that there is some progression made in certain points where people are like, I don't really care. And that's great. But, you know, you don't say anything bad about my fighter. You can do whatever you want. You know, I like this fighter. And, you know, just it seems that people are like, all they care about is it's our kind of MMA world, our bubble, and everyone's cool with people inside of it. And that, you know, that's about it. It seems to be my perception from the outside anyway. So it's good to hear that. It seems like for the most part, your experience has been positive since it's come out. So that's really good to hear.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this past weekend at UFC 215. Not going to go match by match, fight by fight. I want to kind of start out with my feelings going into this fight, and then you wrote a good recap, and I know you were there for the event and wrote a good recap. You can read on MMAfighting.com. You did a video follow-up with Ariel Helwani doing he did his thing there. So going into this show, I don't know if it was because the NFL season was starting. I don't know if it was just because the change in season. I don't know if it's a little Mayweather-McGregor hangover effect. I don't know what it was. I could not get excited for this show. There was some interest level in certain fighters on the card, obviously. Then the Demetrius Johnson fight fell out. And it just, for whatever reason, and maybe that night, you know, going into it, I don't have FS2, so I'm turning on FS1. There's golf for a solid hour on TV. And you had to kind of wait and wait and wait. And it just, I don't know what it was. I could not get excited for really much of anything on the show. And then watching the show, you know, the Sarah Maras fight, I found I was really interested in Sarah Maras because I was like, where did you go for the last 2 years? And she comes back, right, and she does this, has a fantastic performance, comes back, really likable personality. And again, she was someone that was on The Ultimate Fighter and just kind of just disappeared for 2 years. But, you know, there were some interesting highlights, you know, progressions here and there, but going into the show, I don't know what it was, and maybe it was different because you were there covering it or what have you, but I couldn't get into it for whatever reason. Just didn't interest me at all, and it feels like it's kind of taken me a while. Maybe it was the month layoff that the UFC was off, but going into the show, what were you looking forward to the most when you walked in the arena on Saturday?
You know, I mean, so here's the thing, like, sometimes you have these events that are like, they're like little, if you're actually there at the arena, it's almost like a little like warped reality and compared to how the event's being perceived around North America, because this is actually a pretty big deal in town in Edmonton. As a local event, this show was a pretty solid success in terms of being a sellout crowd, a solid gate, the first time in the market. The arena in Edmonton is just an absolutely spectacular, just palace of a brand new arena. It was, you know, like every night I would check in with the local news, and UFC was leading the local sportscast every night. So it was a big deal in town. And when you're kind of there on the ground level, that kind of changes the, you know, the dynamic for what you're reporting. And especially like in the early fights, the Canadian crowds are awesome. They're by and large, they're awesome crowds. They're great fight fans. They're knowledgeable. They're passionate. And they were, you know, the entire undercard, the place was pretty much rocking and rolling. And it hasn't been felt that way in quite some time for UFC undercard. So, you know, it was a really good night up until the main event, I would say, as a live arena event. Now juxtapose that with everything that you were talking about, right? I mean, I think there was, first of all, Conor McGregor, you know, that fight with Floyd Mayweather was just so big and so all-encompassing that, you know, I mean, God, like over the years, like, you know, I bet if you look at the WWF's attendance figure in like the month after WrestleMania 3, they probably didn't do great houses because everyone was burnt out after Hogan and Andre, that type of thing. Yeah, I think it was not just that. So you had the Connor fight, which was coming off the heels of just a few weeks earlier, the Jones and DC fight. So you've had people shell out the $100 for the Connor pay-per-view on right after the Cormier fight. And we've also got the Triple G and Canelo fight coming up this weekend. So it was just really, you know, I don't know if the UFC had the date, you know, planned out quite a bit earlier. And then when they saw the way the landscape was going, they just deliberately kind of wrote it off and put, you know, like Demetrius Johnson, he had his trouble with the UFC. Dana White had trashed Amanda Nunes coming out of July, the July little debacle there. You know, I mean, maybe it was just a little bit of all of the above as to why this didn't resonate. But it was a pretty solid night as a local event at the fights. But I also completely understand why fans would just be like, yeah, I'm not paying $60 for this one.
And to be fair to UFC, the card had changed quite a bit. Originally, obviously, Johnson was supposed to fight Borg. And then also, Junior Dos Santos was supposed to fight Francis Ngannou. So if you kind of pack those in and you look at, okay, Noon Shevchenko, you know, JDS and Ngannou, DJ and Borg, and then you have, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos, Neil Magny, Stevens, Melendez. Okay, that's a little bit, you know, better, I think. So I think this card was definitely hurt by some of the changes, and some stuff obviously was out of their control. So it was just, I think it was unfortunate. Yeah, I think the timing was not bad. Yeah, the live gate was obviously good, and the fact they went to a new market. And I think that's something that I'm really interested in seeing in the year ahead is if they go to, because their ticket sales and their gates, ticket sales wise especially, have been really solid. You know, they're not, you know, they're selling out most places. They're coming close anyway. So I think they're going to some of these new locations, and I think that's been a big benefit. So regardless, I think from that perspective, I guess it was successful. Coming out of the show, obviously, I think the big stories and some of the things you talked about in your piece, I guess here are the things. Henry Cejudo, as you mentioned, big winner coming out of this show. Rafael Dos Anjos, right, obviously looking super impressive, just basically running through Neil Magny. I mean, Neil Magny is a guy that is overlooked, but is a guy that is, you know, he's underappreciated, and Rafael Dos Anjos made him look like he was CM Punk, you know, just completely just ran through him. And then, you know, Jeremy Stevens doing his thing against Gilbert Melendez. Obviously, Melendez with the leg injury there, but Stevens was professional. You know, was on the attack the whole time. Obviously, Caitlin Vieira on the undercard. And then, I want to talk about the main event in a minute. But those are kind of the standout things to me. Very similar for you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, like, you know, one of the issues that's kind of bubbled up in the aftermath of this over the past couple of days is, you know, a couple. So in the Melendez fight, I mean, Melendez took just a wicked beating from on his shin from just the relentless kicks from Stevens. And it comes out that his corner, you know, he's got Nate Diaz in his corner. Nate Diaz isn't about to let him quit, but, you know, Melendez basically goes out and takes another 5 minutes of punishment on that thing, and you saw the, you know, maybe saw the pictures that were posted afterwards. And then you also had just on the undercard just the maybe the worst refereeing I've seen. If it's not the very worst on a major show, then it's on the short list in the Gavin Tucker fight, and where you're in the city of Edmonton, where, you know, the former UFC fighter Tim Hag died after a boxing match where he took like four or five knockdowns.
And the ref was a pallbearer at his funeral. That was the thing, yeah. Right? That's crazy.
Insane. So you go out there, you would think that the commission and the referees would be on, you know, if anything, that they would be more guarded about, you know, having like a quicker trigger finger. But I mean, it was jaw-dropping. Like the only other match I can think of that was ever really this bad on this level was when UFC 115 in Vancouver, David Loazo just took a horrific beat. I can't even remember who did it to him, but David Loazo took just a terrible, terrible beating in a fight. And this is the only thing that I've seen this close to it. And towards the end of the fight, you know, with about a minute or two left, Tucker somehow manages to get up after taking, you know, he has four fractures in his face, gets up, like, turns away from his opponent, basically, like, recklessly just careens, like, face first into the cage. And the referee still let him take more damage standing until the horn. It was just, you know, just an astounding. So where I'm getting at with this and the Melendez thing is that, you know, I mean, the whole culture, like, something needs to change in the culture where, like, you know, when do the corners start losing the machismo and start throwing in the towel when it's really obvious that there's a ref who refuses to stop it. So, you know, when do you, like, is Tucker, who is 10-0 going to this fight, is he ever going to be the same fighter again after this? And you know, is it all because he took, like, just an unnecessarily brutalization? So that was, you know, that's the other thing that kind of stuck out to me coming out of that show.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I think, you know, fighters really need to think of themselves as professional athletes, you know, and not just, and people need to think of them as professional athletes and not, quote unquote, just fighters, right? So if you think about that, essentially, if they are the franchise and you have you don't really have a general manager, but you have your management team and so on, you have to do everything you can realistically to protect your asset. And if your guy is going out there and you're like, look, there's a good, we believe a lot in this asset. Say it's a guy like Gavin Tucker, and we think he has a good, you know, solid, you know, potentially 5 to 6 years of great fighting at the highest level. He's got to the highest level. We think he can sustain 5 or 6 years. We don't know where it can go, but that could be, you know, X, Y, and Z in terms of career earnings. And it just, you know, think of it in terms of, like, longevity. And realizing, and you have to almost get with the corner and be like, look, there's the fighting aspect, and then there's something like this where you're potentially, as you mentioned, I mean, who knows if he's ever going to be the same after this. There's recovery time. There's the mental damage done from this type of stuff. There's just the physical, you know, the damage done for this stuff. And even if people are young, you know, young people get in car accidents all the time and they're never the same. Just because you're young doesn't mean all of a sudden you recover like Wolverine or something, right? It's just that's just the way that this goes, is you got to protect these assets. And to that point, even Gerald Melendez, obviously he's a little bit you know, longer in the tooth, but still it's a case of, all right, do we expect him, you know, there's this you know, Bellator thing looming, depending on when Gilbert goes to free agency, if he wants to keep fighting, maybe he wants to get back there. Does he want to keep fighting in the UFC? You know, even if this, if one extra round cost him another 6 months, say, you know, it's almost like you got to, discretion is the better part of valor, and you got to cut it short. And you don't see a lot of towels being thrown in or guys, it just, there's not enough protection, I think, in the vein of machismo, right? And it's just, I think if they think of these guys more as long-term, I'd say assets, but just as the franchise of this, their own, essentially their own league, their own franchise, right? Then hopefully that will lead to longer careers, healthier guys and women and people getting out of the sport, I don't want to say unscathed, but not taking unnecessary damage for the sake of, you know, 5 minutes of a crowd applauding.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, in Melendez's case, like, look, we're never going to be able to convince Nate Diaz, who was in his corner, of any of these arguments. But, you know, as it pertains to the rest of this sport in MMA over the last 10, 15 years, we kind of, you know, we took a little bit of pride in that. Hey, you get the culture of, okay, you get in an arm lock or a choke or whatever, you cap rather than have your arm snap in most cases. And we kind of looked at that as like, you know, hey, that puts us a cut above boxing, which has that, like, you know, that kind of mentality that, like, you're a coward if you quit. But it just seems to be encroaching into the sport, you know, in a way that's starting to get a little uncomfortable. And, you know, for everything you just said there, I co-sign.
All right. So we'll one last question on or talking point. as far as 215 goes. So we had this main event, Nunes. I've pronounced it three different ways. Nunes, Nunes, or some other way. What? How do you pronounce her last name?
I keep calling her Nunes, and I hear Nunes half the time. So I'm sticking with Nunes until she tells me otherwise.
Got it. Fair enough. So she comes out of this the victory with or comes out of the fight split decision win, and I don't know what it is. I just don't care about Valentina Shevchenko. I don't know what it is. I just don't care, and I don't know if I'm missing something or if it's just certain fighters appeal to certain people, but she doesn't do anything for me in terms of getting excited to watch her fight or anything like that. I know she had the win against Holly Holm and what have you. Just, I don't know. I was interested in the rivalry a little bit, but just doesn't do anything for me. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I mean, you might be, but not for this.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, I don't know. I agree. Like, I think in the case of Shevchenko, it's like, it's a fighter that on paper it seems like she should be a star, right? Like her pedigree, you know, she does have like a solid charisma outside the cage. She did at the open workouts, kind of tore the house down with doing like a Russian dance kind of routine. So she does have that, and again on paper, like her look, her personality, her skill set seems to suggest that she should be able to connect with the fans, but there's just this intangible something. I don't know. I wish I could. I'm stumbling to adequately describe it, but I agree with you. And I mean, so this is her chance to shine, right? And on paper, this looked like, okay, this was going to be like, on paper, it looked like a potential barn burner of a fight because they're, you know, to me, I think at this point, I don't want to get into a huge debate on like ranking pound for pound top women's fighter, but they might be, along with Joanna Jędrzejczyk, like the three most talented all around skilled fighters on the women's side. So, like, what the fight didn't deliver, like Valentina. I mean, look, when I scored the fight 1-3-5 for Amanda, 2-4 for Valentina, and it was one of those fights where that was kind of the consensus of pretty much everyone who was covering it cage side. And then sometimes, you know, there are those fights that look different live than on TV, because I go on a Twitter and it seemed like more than half of the people on there think that Valentina won. But I don't know, she just never, like, you have to seize these moments if you want to become, you know, a next level star. And she seemed to think her game plan appeared to be too heavily banking on the idea that Nunes would gas in the fight and she would take over in the later rounds. And Nunes very obviously has worked on her cardio and fought a smarter fight in terms of pacing herself to go five rounds than she used to. And it just made Valentina look flat because she never showed that urgency when she really needed to. So, no, you're not crazy. I didn't think Valentina won the fight, and I don't think there's any appetite to see that fight again.
Yeah, and so you did a good job kind of recapping or kind of opining on where you'd like to see women's featherweight go, or women's bantamweight rather, go next and for MMA fighting. So I guess for those that haven't read the piece yet, how would you summarize where you see this division at right now?
I think just kind of hit the pause button on this for a bit, because Nunes is going to be out for a while. She's finally getting surgery on the chronic sinusitis that, you know, Twitter eggs tried to say that she just had the sniffles. Like, she still has it, and she's getting surgery to correct it. So she's going to be out for a while. And I just think you sit back and kind of see how things play out, because if you're looking at, if you're looking at who might be next in line, Raquel Pennington's won 4 fights in a row. She beat Miesha Tate last time. She's been a little bit of out of sight, out of mind, you know, since then. That was last November. Ketlin Vieira is 8-0. She had a nice win over Sarah McMahon. I don't know if she's necessarily quite ready for the next step yet. And then I don't know, you know, maybe you sit back and see how this whole game that, that Cyborg is playing right now in terms of trying to get a better contract or a new contract plays out and see if the Cyborg Holly fight happens. And, you know, if that doesn't happen, I know that he can't really make the case in terms of the divisional scheme that Holly's the number one contender. But if you wanted to jumpstart interest in the women's bantamweight division again, Holly's the only woman left who can really, you know, you could take her and Amanda and put Amanda at the top of the bill again. So yep. I think you just put everything on hold and see where the chips kind of land.
Yeah, I think the division definitely is hurt by the fact that both Kat Zingano, who has been just really basically been non-existent the past couple of years, and just, you know, I think the fact that she has not been around is hurt. And then also that Julianna Pena just really hasn't panned out. I think she, at least for right now, obviously she's still young, but I think she's dealing with some of this out of the cage stuff. She lost to Shevchenko back in January this year. It's kind of been quiet since then. So, I mean, I think those were two players, and along with obviously Holly Holm, that, you know, you were kind of hoping that maybe with Ronda essentially just kind of being, I don't say ushered out, but kind of ushering herself out of the way, this next group of potential stars didn't really come through yet as we might have hoped. And I still think there's something there with those three, but there just needs to be a more consistency and, you know, some big victories. So I think, I think we're still kind of a ways away from this division really gelling. Yeah. So let's go ahead a couple quick hits and then, I can see our Ebola conversation in the distance. It's coming up quick. We had to get off the exit and stop off, but so a couple other quick hits, obviously coming up this weekend. This is a nonstop 4 months of UFC events. And this weekend from the PPG Paints Arena, Dave Doyle, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a lot of P's there. Luke Rockhold finally returned to action after what seems like 10 years off. Taking on David Branch. This is a very, I would say it was a kind of unusual main event when it was announced. And Luke Rockhold trying to get back in the mix at 185. That the GSP guy seemed to jump him in line for a shot at Michael Bisping. But I think it's good. You know, Luke Rockhold kind of getting back in the mix. I mean, who knows, really? Dave Branch, he returned back to the UFC after that World Series of Fighting exile where he won some belts and looked good and then came back in a stinker performance. When he returned, co-main event, Mike Perry, Thiago Alves, Hector Lombard's also on this show, and there's not a lot else on this show. But kind of, I guess, we'll just focus on the main event. Luke Rockhold is back. What do you think?
I kind of have no idea what to think because it's been, about 15, 16 months since
we've seen
Luke.
Yeah, it's been a long time, yeah.
Right? And in that 16 months ago, like, whoever thought that he was going to get knocked out by Michael Bisping in that fight, you know? He was supposed to fight Jacare, and that fight fell out. Just kind of one thing after another, and you almost wonder, like, there was that, maybe 5 or 6 months ago where he made this, he went on to the MMA hour and tried to get the rest of the middleweight division to, like, boycott, and that just fizzled. That was like, you know, I'm trying to come up with a historically bad, that was like Shockmaster bad as far as angles go. It makes you wonder, like, has his head really been in this? You know, like, where are we actually going to, can you pause time here and go back to the Luke Rockhold who was just an absolute killer a couple of years ago? David Branch. Okay, David Branch had a real nice run in World Series of Fighting, but if we're being honest, he wasn't always fighting the top level competition here. And, you know, David Branch washed out the first time around in UFC. And, you know, as you alluded to, he certainly did not look like a world beater in his return to the UFC. So, I mean, I'll put it this way. If Luke Rockhold doesn't win this and doesn't win this in impressive fashion, then he's in real trouble.
Couple of news notes before we get to Bola. Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose Namajunas. A lot of vowels and a lot of consonants in those two names, and that is booked for UFC 217 at MSG. Thumbs up by you?
Oh, so I had two thumbs up. Oh, I love that fight.
Yeah.
I'm not – like, Was there anyone else? I'm kind of blanking right now. Was there anyone else really even in, you know, consideration that at 115 right now? So, you know, Rose's looked like an absolute killer. I mean, she just, you know, just pretty much ended the Paige VanZant hype train. She's looked great. Rose has finally become the fighter we all kind of like projected on her early on when she had some of those slick submissions in Invicta. So, you know, it's the right match at the right time. And man, that show at MSG just can't get here fast enough.
Yeah, three title fights what do we got? DJ, we have GSP Bisping. We have TJ versus Cody. Hopefully no injuries to happen between now and then. And then obviously Ian Jacek and Rose Namajunas. That should be really fun. And yeah, other than that, we have I'm kind of just looking at your Twitter page here. Nick Newell coming back for LFA. And that's pretty much it in terms of kind of the big news for this week and all that good stuff. So, Dave, we're here. We're at Bola.
We're
at the discussion point. This is something you want to talk about. So I'm going to start out by just asking you, how many of the 3 days did you attend?
I was only at the third day. I was at the finals on Sunday.
Day three. Okay, so you're day three. We'll set the stage. You are there. Obviously, Mr. Meltzer is there as well. And
Rockstar. My God, he was a superstar in the crowd. I was, you know, I'm pretty sure that given the number of pictures he's taken, he should have done the Rock and Roll Express in Tennessee, taking, signing autographs and taking pictures, Polaroids for $5 a pop. He would have cleaned house, but now Dave's too much of a gentleman to do that. But my God, yeah.
He should have been flexing, doing the Polaroids, flexing the guns and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
24-inch pythons, brother. So
I was only at the third night, so I didn't see the second night was when the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega were in, but so I didn't get to see that. But
all right, so
there for the final show.
You were a man of many words. You obviously wrote about your Arena Mexico experience for our site. So I'm just gonna hand the microphone over to you. Tell me what you want to tell me about Bola, the experience, walking in to walking out, just the whole thing. The floor is yours, and I'll ask some questions afterward.
You know what? It was so this, keeping in mind that there was a period of about a decade where I stopped going to wrestling matches, this might have been the best night of live wrestling I've been to in 20 years. Your readers who remember the piece I wrote about Arena Mexico, kind of know my background as a wrestling fan. But I think this year, 2017, after calling myself a lapsed wrestling fan for at least a decade, this is like the year that I've become a fan again. You went to Arena Mexico. I went to this PWG show. I also went to the second night of New Japan in Long Beach. And it's just, it's opened my eyes to just what a ridiculous amount of young talent there is out there and how good these guys are and how, how up to date the price. I'm still not watching WWE. I can't like try to watch Raw. And then I watch these terrible scripted, promos and all that and roll my eyes and change the channel. But there's just so much talent out there. And you know, if you're like, if there's like a lapse fan like me out there listening, you haven't been to a show in a while, you know, go out and see a show. But so in terms of PWG, man, it was just, you know, I think the thing that that I can compare it most to, the only thing that's even a close parallel to PWG would be like the old ECW arena back in the day, but it's not 100% they're just such completely different products in the ring and the audience is quite a bit different, but you get there, they just kind of have their way of doing things. It was out in Reseda, which is out in the valley, which is it's a part of the outskirts of LA that you really have no particular reason being there unless your life has gone really wrong. but, you know, so it's out in Reseda. It's out in American Legion Hall. It just so happened that that weekend, it was 100 degrees in LA that weekend. That was when the big brush fires broke out. You know, you're out there, you pretty much have to wait. If you even want to get a chance of getting a seat, Got to wait in line for a couple hours. Out in sweltering heat, you've got fans from just all over the world, super hardcore fans that are, you know, knowledgeable and passionate. And you know, it just felt like I had stumbled onto a community more than a typical wrestling show. And you get in, and every available inch of the little Legion Hall is just packed. Like it's impossible to get around, and it's 100 degrees outside, so it felt like it was about 120 inside. And I don't know, just from bell to bell, from start to finish, it was just a tremendous night of wrestling. Great matches, just guys at their best, guys who, you know, I don't know, again, I mean, this was my first PWG show. I know they've been doing this for 15 years, but to just come in for the first time and go into a little hall like that and see wrestlers performing as if, you know, as if like they were at WrestleMania in terms of just how strong they were performing. You know, it was it was just a hell of a night.
Good recap. Very good. So I kind of got a few notes about PWG that is, you know, people have observed from the outside is literally it is from everyone is like on the outside because they don't stream the shows. The shows are only available via DVD, which even though they're on Blu-ray, you can get a Blu-ray or regular DVD, I guess. In 2017, it feels antiquated, but you look at the website, I was just going to the website, they still have the tickets on, not on sale, but kind of just almost like the show is this weekend, right? They just have like all the cards and saying everything's sold out, but the show actually is already, you know, far long past. So it is, and you mentioned American Legion Hall and the fact they sell out so quickly and so on. But all this aside, I was talking to Jack Encarnacio a few weeks ago on the show, talking about Brock Lesnar, and what makes Brock Lesnar special is that he's not one of the things is he's not on social media. He's not tweeting all the time. He's not omnipresent in our lives as wrestling fans every single week, every single day, other than what he does on Raw when he's there and or pay-per-views, and then that's it. He's not like – he's just not out there like a Cena or Reigns or any of the current roster talents and so on. So there's this kind of like throwback effect. With the Observer newsletter, I've heard this from countless people when I always talk about like we'd love to change from the outside. I'd love to change how the Observer newsletter looks, reads, and all this stuff. And you have people that are just like, I don't want it to change at all because it's completely different and this is what I like. It's something different. So it's like, okay, PWG is something completely different in the fact it doesn't stream. It doesn't you can't watch this stuff easily. There's no video on demand. There's just you have to buy DVDs. You are very lucky if you're able to get tickets to the show. It's in a small American Legion Hall when they could probably sell at least, I don't know, probably 2,000 tickets maybe. They could easily do what, you know, New Japan was doing, I think, for those set of shows in Long Beach. They could tour if they wanted to. They could do a lot of things to make it bigger, which in the minds of us is like, oh yeah, why wouldn't you make it bigger? But they don't. It's just intimate thing for both the Bola events, for other shows. It's just its own universe that the rest of us kind of the outside looking in. And there is something, not nostalgic, but there's a simplicity to it that is really attractive to a lot of people. And this was your first PWG event. It sounds like you're intoxicated with the product now and actually going to these things. Is that fair to say?
Well, before I answer that, I just have to tell you that as an Observer subscriber since 1992, if you ever do change the look of the Observer, I will be the one who leads up the posse with the pitchforks.
Oh, no.
So don't ever change the Observer. Don't you dare. I think Dave could better explained in the Observer some of the reasons why they have to keep doing things the way they do in terms of the contract some of these guys are on and some of them can't be on live streaming. I don't have as good of a grasp on that as Dave does, but you know, if you're probably an Observer reader, if you're listening to this and he had it in last week's edition. But yeah, I mean, I just felt like I saw something, you know, really just, I know I'm sounding like a huge mark here, but I just saw something just special and epic a couple weekends ago. And it is like, yeah, the fact that you're part of this little kind of cult that gets to see it does make it that much more memorable of an evening. And I would say, you know, okay, if for listeners who still own DVD players, when this comes out, the match between Keith Lee and Donovan Dijak, which was the five-star match, may have been, if not the best, like, big man match I've ever seen. Like, it's certainly the best since the heyday of Vader. I had never seen either of these guys wrestle before, because, like I said, I'm just kind of slowly coming back up to speed on wrestling. But Keith Lee, the stuff that he can do, he's not just a power moves guy. I mean, just the way he can fly and the way he can do, the way he can move around the ring at his side is just kind of awe-inspiring. And he had the right dance partner and Dijak, who's like, you know, 6'6" himself. And it was an incredible matchup, and just the way, I don't know. So when you have a blowout match like that, the third match on the show, you know, normally you would think, okay, the crowd's going to be burned out. So the next match after that is Zack Sabre Jr. against Rey Fénix, and they laid out a brilliant, there was primarily a mat wrestling based match, which was the complete opposite direction of the previous match. And you would have thought that there's no way anyone else could have bought the crowd back around after that. And they had a tremendous match. And it was going into that match, I just, you know, I'd seen Rey Fénix here and there and assumed he was just a high flyer. And, you know, the stuff that he was able to show off was really impressive. And just, I don't know, there was something about the way those two matches kind of played off each other that told me that this is, you know, very well thought out product, and that the wrestlers really care about the show that they're putting on.
Yeah, you saw a shit ton of talent. I mean, yeah, the what Dave said about the Lee Dijak match, to quote Dave, this match was insane. It was among the best matches of the year, and it was the most acrobatic agility combined with power moves based big man's match I've ever seen. That's coming from Dave, and this is a guy.
From Dave Meltzer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Dave Mel. Yeah, it's pretty crazy stuff. So, I mean, yeah, the fact you get to see Matt Riddle, Ricochet, Keith Lee, who you mentioned, Jeff Cobb. I mean, you saw a hell of a show. I mean, the fact alone that you saw Jeff Cobb versus Riddle, you saw Riddle versus Penta, you saw, you know, Ricochet three times, Fénix versus Zack Sabre Jr., the Lee versus Dijak match, and then all that aside, you get to see a main event in the finals. Spoiler alerts if you haven't heard this. If you're waiting for the DVD, and there are some people that do wait for this. Ricochet versus Jeff Cobb versus Keith Lee in the finals. I mean, for $85 or so, whatever the ticket costs, that's well worth the price of admission, as they say. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. The main event, it kind of felt like the crowd was kind of pulling for Lee there a little bit, because they're big, huge dude that just keeps coming back for more and more. But they have such respect for Ricochet and what he's meant to the promotion over the years that, you know, people ended up happy with the result there, too. Especially, I mean, Ricochet is just so damn good. They spent, you know, the first half of the match was basically Cobb and Lee just treating Ricochet like a human pinball. And Ricochet still had, after wrestling two other matches that night and being just, you know, brutalized, still had the stamina to pull off, you know, his acrobatic moves. And it was a pretty fitting ending. I didn't even see the first two nights, but just based on the third night, pretty fitting ending to a pretty awesome night.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And yeah, definitely pick up the DVD set if you're out shopping, you know, if you need some early Christmas presents, maybe a Halloween gift or something like that. Hell, a Veterans Day gift. Just buy something nice for yourself and pick up the DVD set and hopefully enjoy it there. So with all that said, we talked a little bit about UFC this past weekend, a little bit of spice for this weekend's UFC event, and also a little bit about Bola. What, anything else on your mind before I let you go?
I think we pretty much ran the gamut here.
I think
the Red
did.
Sox are up 11-1. That's pretty good.
Yeah, against the Oakland A's. And actually, as we had a little bit of breaking news, I saw pass by the feed. ESPN, a source tells, I think it's Brett Okamoto, that John Jones' B sample also confirms the fail test as well. So no big surprise there, but looks like no Hail Mary for John Jones there.
Well, that is yeah, we're not going to see Jones for a while.
No, very unfortunate. Very unfortunate stuff. Before I let you go, obviously you can follow. We can all follow you if we haven't already. Follow you on Twitter, Dave Doyle, MMA. What's coming up, both for that site and the other sites, projects, all that good stuff? The floor, once again, is yours.
You know what? Just tune in to find out. Twitter.com/DaveDoyleMMA.
Wow, that is intrigue. Well, Dave, I appreciate it. I'm glad you reached out because I was now you got me excited to see these bola matches. Dave Meltzer actually does that quite a bit as well. Like he always calls matches fights now when he's talking on Observer Radio. So now he's got me doing it. But this is it's been fun. A little bit of smorgasbord of combat sports, and obviously Triple G and Canelo coming up soon. And September's looking to be a pretty good month after all. Awesome stuff. Great. Dave Doyle, thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out. Enjoy the matches, enjoy the fights, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, big thanks to Dave Doyle for stopping by. You can follow him on Twitter, read his good work at MMAfighting.com, as well as Yahoo Sports. And that was a fast 45 minutes, so hopefully it sounded it's that same experience for you. I looked up at the clock. I was like, wow, that flashed by. UFC 116, actually not UFC 116, UFC Fight Night 116. I have recorded this segment at least, started and stopped at least five times because I keep messing up words. I should just run with it. UFC Fight Night 116. Happening this weekend. We talked a little about Rockhold Branch. I want to go over a few other highlights or guys I'm kind of looking at this weekend. Hector Lombard, speaking of taking chances, kind of just trying to figure out where he fits at 185, taking on Anthony Smith, a longtime veteran of the UFC. Kamaru Usman, interesting prospect at welterweight, still kind of on the rise, taking on Sergio Moraes. Justin Ledet, a very interesting prospect at heavyweight. I think he fought in the last few months, but it seemed like it took a long time after his debut for him to kind of get back in there. I could be completely wrong. He's a former boxer, or he has a fantastic jab, interesting look, personality. He's a guy to watch opening up the main card of FS1, which this drives me crazy. And I realize it's for scheduling everything, but they don't need to separate. They have what they call a prelim card for the FS1 show. The prelims and the main card, so to speak, they're all on FS1. So you're going to be able to see, 10 straight fights on FS1. Don't split them up with a prelim and a main card. Just don't do it. Just let it roll, right? It's just, that shit drives me crazy. And I get it's for scheduling and blah, blah, blah. Just, I don't know, just drives me bananas. Weird things that fire people up, right? And also Uriah Hall, he's on the quote-unquote prelims. He's taking on Christoph Jotko. Uriah Hall, really just what an interesting career that guy's had, right? Tony Martin taking on Olivier Aubin-Mercier and some other fights as well. So it should be an interesting night, good night, fun night of fights. And again, they're free, so you really can't complain that much. And this is a busy schedule. There's a lot of fights coming up, a lot of events, and we roll right into this other set coming up this weekend. And let's see, finally, real quick, we'll let you go. JNPO Classic, we're kind of going through the archives of the WGAM MMA show. I'm a little bit behind. The idea, as I wanted to release them actually on the day they came out 6 years ago. However, I have to record all the intros, and I have to listen to all the shows, record the intros, and I just got way behind. So the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be releasing probably two or three in a week at a given time. So if you guys are just like, I don't really care about the old stuff, they come across the RSS feed, just delete them, do whatever you need to do. If you want to listen to them, they are kind of fun, especially one coming up in a couple weeks, probably next week, for when the UFC announced the Fox deal, which was, I was listening to that today. It's kind of fun because PJ, my co-host, and I, we're kind of talking about what the possibilities were. And it's fun to see as they start to negotiate this thing of what's going to happen next. It's kind of fun to see, all right, what were we thinking about? What actually happened in that stretch? So be on the lookout for that. But I appreciate for those that are listening to this, again, if you just want the new stuff, just feel free to delete those. No worries. But I think it's been fun listening to these, and they're not going to go on forever. So the new stuff is coming, as is this episode. So this is a new one. And my throat's starting to hurt, so with that, we're going to let you go. We've talked for over an hour. So again, big thanks to Dave Doyle. Thanks to all you guys for listening. As always, you have a lot of options in your podcasting day. I know I have like 25 different podcasts I listen to, and I'm very selective what I listen to. So the fact you guys spend the time with me, I greatly appreciate it. So thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next week and having some fun guests here over the next couple of weeks. So the ride is not over. The ride is not over as we are on the way to episode 100 coming up at some point, probably early next year. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.